once more under the breach, dear friend.
Now let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth... Well, yeah, of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, May 13th at 11:06 a.m. Central... Are we standard? We're daylight. We're central daylight
Well,
time.
Standard in a standard fashion, we're daylight.
We're daylight. We're central daylight time. Well, that's an hour different. And time is relative, as you can tell.
Right.
Einstein was completely correct because it moves around.
Yeah, Congress changes our time regularly.
Yeah, I was talking to one of our clients.
It has to do with the mass effect of having that much mass.
That much hot air in one place.
Yeah, all that hot air in one place changes time.
Yes. I was talking to one of our clients who's in a different time zone, and we were joking about this. And I said, "What?" And if you think about this, setting an appointment with somebody in Japan is exciting because not only are they in a different time zone, they're in a different day. And you got to remember what day they're in versus what day we're in. They're in tomorrow.
And they won't even tell us what's going to happen.
Right. And they're living in Tomorrowland, which is clearly Japan. And, of course, Japan looks at us and say, we're yesterday land, you know. So there's got to be some effect on that, you know. So anyway, but you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you give us a call in here at 773-1400, the area code is 254, and ask us some questions, we'll try to answer. And Jake has some more answer about emergency funds and credit cards and stuff.
Yeah, let me talk about that. I mentioned that the caller should log in and change the nickname of a bank account to emergency. After having the conversation with your fiance, figure out that dollar number that you feel comfortable as a good reserve number. And that's going to be different for a small business owner than it is for somebody getting started in life or somebody on a fixed income. It's something that you have to figure out based on what your expectations of disaster are and how big that could be. A small business owner might not get paid at all next month for the entire business and still have to make payroll. They've got to have a lot of reserves. But somebody on a fixed income is going to get paid. Social Security is going to get paid next month and the month after and the month after. It's not going to just disappear. It may happen that people that aren't getting it yet won't get it, but the government's not going to turn off your Social Security once it's on. So for a young couple getting started, setting that number is important, and you put it as part of the name of the account so that every time you log on, you see what your goal is. And that's important if you don't have enough in there. You know how much you need to get in there. But it's also important so that you know when enough is enough. Okay, you've got emergency covered now. You have set the goal, and one of the problems is that we move our goalpost. If you don't set it in advance, then, you know, this is completely anecdotal, and I'm going longer than what I said I was going to, but
you are?
I'm going to let you in on this. I've had clients come in over the years, and particularly young couples, they're really getting into the swing of things with savings, and they say, good to see you, Jake. I ask about savings, and they say, we have never had this much in savings before in our lives. We're extremely excited. We've got $17,000 in savings. I'm so happy. This is for any kind of emergency and anything else that we have in mind is great. And so a year later, we have another appointment. They sit down and they say, and I say, how are your savings doing? And they say, we're so excited. We have never had this much in savings before in our lives. We have $24,000 in savings. And I say, congratulations. And I mean, it's exciting. This is the sort of thing that it's a symptom of living the way people should live. And I say, okay, so what would happen? How would you feel if you had an emergency? Your air conditioner breaks, your hot water heater collapses, and you have four flat tires in the same month. It's going to cost $7,000. So now you're down to $17,000. How do you feel about that? And universally, I get these dejected expressions of, oh, I don't feel good about that. Where a year before at $17,000, they were giddy with happiness that they'd finally reached it. Unless you set your goal in advance, you never know when you reach it. There's something about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Every once in a while, you have to stop pursuing and just be happy. pursuit is great, but you got to stop and be happy occasionally. And that means setting goals that you can recognize when you hit them.
It's like, don't worry, be happy.
Right. And there's the next set of goals after that. You've got your emergency taken care of. You're back to spending all the money extra that you want to on getting your debts paid off. Well, I like having another, at least one more named account. I like having a named account for every known expense that you've got coming. If there's big ones, like you want to buy a car, we'll set up an account, call it car. If you're going to buy a house down payment. Set the goal as part of the name. This is how much we want. If it's 20% and you want a $100,000 house, you want $20,000 in there. Say house down payment, $20,000. And set up your budget so that money's going in there. Know this, if you have an emergency and it knocks your emergency fund down, you stop all those other expenditures, you stop putting extra money into the house, you stop paying off extra on the debt, until the emergency comes back. Because the reality is that if emergency disappears, you're going to dip into your house fund.
Say
that's going to hurt.
Emergency fund disappears.
Yeah, emergency fund. Yes, not emergency disappears.
Yes.
If your emergency fund disappears and you have to dip into your house account, it hurts more.
Here is one rule that I think is should apply to this, and that's to remember, at a minimum, your house that you purchase will cost you as much to maintain as to pay for.
Yes. So
whatever your house payment is.
Just think of that long term.
If you're not in a house and somebody else is paying for everything, then, and let's just say you said you were able to put away $1,500 a month, by the way, and you think, okay, that means I could afford a $1,500 a month house payment. I hate to break this to you, but
no, not the case.
It's just not true. The reality is that if you've got a $1,500 a month house payment, you need to have an extra $1,500 in cash flow going into house sinking fund. Now, you think that's crazy? Because your electric bill went up, your water bill went up, stuff in the house is going to break over time, and I know this is really hard for people to conceive of, but every few years, and it seems like if you live in a house any length of time, it's very few years, you got to replace the roof.
Depending on the type of roof, yeah.
And odds are, when you get your first house, you won't have an armor-plated metal roof that is made out of gold, platinum, titanium, like some of them are. You know, you could get really fortunate like
Solar City roofs are supposed to have a lifetime guarantee against breakage and give you power. They're just a little bit more expensive than normal roof.
Just a little
bit,
like they cost as much as the rest of the house. But, you know, you could be really, really fortunate like the house that I happen to live in, which has a slightly rusty steel roof that it was removed from a gymnasium when they tore it down and they nailed it on about two deep, and it's basically you can shoot at it and bullets bounce off. But most people don't have that. They have roofs that are made out of asphaltic shingles, and the hailstorm comes along and it messes up your roof, and your roof then is going to leak, and you call the insurance company, and the insurance company comes out and says, okay, we'll pay about half of the cost of replacing your roof, and you pay the other half because it depreciated over time.
So what you're saying there is you need to have money set aside in savings, even above what you expect to have going out. The next named account that I recommend, and I recommend this really highly, after you've got all your goals taken care of, you know you've got a down payment on a car or a down payment on a house, you get those taken care of. And the final account, and this just depends on your own personal persuasion, I like to have it either called the awesome account or the hallelujah account. And hallelujah in the sense of hallelujah, I get to go and do this thing, or awesome, you know what that means to you. You get to define it. And it's the most expensive money you have, because it's only what's left over after refilling your emergency fund and your house down payment fund and your property tax fund and everything that you have that's a known expense. It shouldn't be a surprise coming up later. And then it goes into the awesome fund. It's the most expensive money you have. It had to get through all of those other filters first. The reason why you want your emergency fund to be in good shape is because you never want an emergency to dip into your awesome fund. That hurts in a way that's hard to explain. If you know that you're going to use it for something really fun and it disappears, just think back to the piggy bank as a child. I'm saving up for a batch of balloons or a trampoline, and mom and dad say, no, you need to pay for the window you broke. It's painful. So have an emergency fund. And that's really the big things. Name your accounts, put the goal on them. The only goal that doesn't need to be on there is on the awesome fund. And as an example, this is something, I don't know if I've talked to you about this, but this is one of the things that it helps when you name your account, so that if you're out and about on a Sunday afternoon and you've just done some things, you picked up something at Home Depot and you're on your way home with your spouse, significant other, and you say, let's go out to eat. Well, one or the other of you have had this conversation before, so it's the other person's job to say, is it awesome? And you'll know. Some days you will say, yes, it's awesome. This is an awesome time for that. And other days you'll go, no, let's go home and eat. The only person that will know is you, because you know what awesome means to you. Having that name as a tool in order to manage anything, you must measure it. Our words are our greatest measurement tool. When you name things, you have more control over them. If you doubt this, try calling loudly your children's name using the middle name as well. Names are important. and that's my 1 minute that lasted for 18. So,
well, you didn't mention about 12. The improved trade with China.
Yes.
that is going to, I mean, you did mention it, but you didn't mention one of the key elements is it's going to,
they sell keys.
Well, it's going to help eliminate currency manipulation.
I don't see how that's possible.
No, we're going to be trading. No. You just really need to read the details in this, because a big piece of this is we are going to allow Chinese cooked poultry, chickens,
yes,
to enter
chickens.
The United States.
Yes.
So, you know, chickens, trading chickens with...
That's one of the oldest forms of currency.
And they allow beef to enter China. So what we've done is we've done an exchange of chickens for cows.
This sounds like the Muppets.
Well, it may be the Muppets, but I mean, what we need to do is...
We get to use each other's banks and cattle and chickens.
Yeah, that's... And I think what we need to do is...
This is an ancient migratory wedding.
We need to really dig into this and find out how many chickens equals a cow in the trade with China, and we'll set an exchange rate of chickens per cows.
And we have to determine how to pay taxes on the offspring. Is that a dividend tax?
I don't know. But now cooked chickens do not – they're neutralized. They don't have
right.
offspring.
Right. They no longer have offspring.
So they can
right.
only send us cooked chickens. They can't send us live ones.
Seems like a rough – are we sending back raw beef, or are we sending back cattle?
It's beef, not
cattle. Beef. Okay, so there's the reproductive issues aren't going to be there. Okay.
So we need to really look into this in a great deal of detail. I mean,
it's a relatively simple deal.
No, I think it's very critical, because it was as a result of this deal that the president decided to say they weren't doing currency manipulation anymore. Because obviously they are staying. I think secretly, if he taped it, they have worked out some kind of deal where so many chickens equals a cow. And we need to find out what that is, and probably would make the headlines of the Washington Post.
Well, I've got to come in with a couple of thrown-in jokes here, if you don't mind. Okay. Since we're talking about beef, what do you call a cow with two legs? Lean beef. What do you call a cow with no legs? Ground beef. All right.
That was bad.
Done with the elementary school jokes.
Oh, that was bad.
Yes, I'm not advocating anyone should make these jokes reality, by the way, just in case PETA's out with paint for me. And, that's not what I'm intending.
Piece of this is China is the top export market for U.S. agricultural products. I like a lot of people didn't know that. The total value of exports has risen by 1,100% to China. Of agricultural exports has risen by 1,100% to China since 2000. We send them $21.4 billion in edibles.
There's a reason for that.
There's
a really, really good reason for
Chinese
that.
Chinese are hungry.
Yes, they are hungry. They've taken a lot of the people out of the rice paddies, literally out of the rice paddies, and sent them off to work industrial or technical jobs. They've educated them at least enough to do that. But they haven't got a big machine like a tractor to come and replace their labor. This is one of those strange things about the rice paddies. Unless you have a big corporate farm, the machine to plant the rice is still a person, in a barefoot person bending over and pushing sprouts into the ground. We do it differently here, but getting those massive machines up into the backcountry of China is really difficult. So they're having a little bit of a food shortage. They're buying it from Africa and from us.
And they also have barriers. It's one of the things that didn't come down. Is a barrier for large manufactured goods like rice planting machines,
right?
Which so they don't make.
They don't make them. We make them, but they can't buy them from us because they don't want to buy them from us.
Right. They want to make their own. Their provision, if I understand it correctly, is they want to buy one.
Right. Exactly.
copy it.
Those of you that don't know about this, a Chinese billionaire a couple of years back, well, more than a couple of years now, 6 or 7 years back, went to Russia, and this was more in the time that Russia was having some struggles, and said that he's in the hotel business, and he wanted to have a big floating hotel. So he bought a Soviet-era aircraft carrier from the Russians and said, I'm going to make this into a hotel. He got it back to China and the government immediately started dismantling it and making plans. And they have now created their own aircraft carrier. It is not quite shipshape yet, but very close. That looks amazingly similar to the Soviet aircraft carrier that is not a hotel. So
right.
Basically the Chinese are very good at taking one item, and reverse engineering it and saying, okay, now we can make them two.
Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's simply say they're really good at recycling hotels into aircraft.
Yes. I mean, what other nation in the world can take a hotel and turn it into an aircraft?
Right. Now, they haven't figured out
that's innovation.
Now, this is in the other, but the problem with that really boils down to something, which is why I'm dismissive of China ever overtaking the United States in a serious manner. Because by the time they figure out how to do
this,
they won't have enough people to
do it. Right, their demographics are upside down by that point.
But they have this Soviet-era aircraft carrier, which they refurbished.
Uh-huh.
And they basically cleaned it up and polished it and got it to working again.
The Russians have a Soviet-era aircraft carrier as well.
Right.
One.
Right.
Offshore in Syria.
The difference is, well, it went back. It only could stay a very short period of time.
The refueling was way. It's not atomic.
Right.
It has a lot of smoke coming out of it as it burns huge amounts of diesel.
But the difference is the Russians were actually launching aircraft and recovering aircraft to their aircraft carrier.
The Chinese have yet to do that.
Yeah, they haven't figured out. But if they have aircraft carriers, that's cool.
Yeah, they've got the carriers. They don't have anybody that knows how to land on them yet.
They're working on it, though.
It's not the taking off part that's the difficult. I mean, that's not easy, but
the
landing is a little.
They have landing strips in China that are painted to look like aircraft carriers. The problem is, and they've run into this.
They're not moving.
You got it. And one of the things that I read an analysis on the Chinese projection of naval projection of power is the huge, I mean, massive infrastructure that has to go in and
to an aircraft carrier.
Multiple generations. We began training seamen and now women and pilots in World War II.
It was before that.
World War II on the use of aircraft carrier, and there's this body of knowledge that has been passed from the old petty officer down to the young seaman.
That's the thing that they
gradually
accumulated.
And to give you an example of how complex that is, we started a business in 2007, an investment advisory business. We'd been in the brokerage business before that. And we had other people's manuals. We had other people's experience. We'd worked on the investment advisory side for other people. Other organizations, we're still figuring out how to properly document, how to properly make it work.
I think we're ahead of any other organization I've ever seen, but it's never going to be perfect.
And so the result is, you know, here we are 10 years later, and we're starting to get a handle on how to run a simple business, a really relatively simple business.
Not an aircraft carrier, which is a city that everyone has a specific job, and if they mess up, the whole city can fail.
And if you'll notice, aircraft, you ever see a picture of aircraft? Occasionally you'll see a picture of an aircraft carrier steaming along on its own. That's BS, excuse me. If you actually see what happens when an aircraft carrier goes someplace, there is a literal fleet of ships accompanying the aircraft carrier to support it and defend it. And the Chinese don't have that.
They have a lot of fleets, but they're not in any way capable of supplying and maintaining an aircraft carrier. So
actually, they did build some very effective aircraft carriers in the South China Sea.
Oh, yes. They're called islands.
Right.
They don't move very well, but you can project sea power from them.
Right. And so that's
effective. All you have to do is just make bases everywhere in the ocean, and mm-hmm. you don't need aircraft
and
carriers.
And then claim that as your territory.
Yeah.
And that will give you reasons to use it.
Now, we're talking about China because China really is a mega economy. It is huge. It is bigger than any other economy on the planet except our own. And it has a lot more to do with their population than anything else. Their per capita, they're still far down the chart. Per capita GDP is still way down.
It's way below Mexico's.
And yeah, Mexico is better off than China. However, when that many people exist, this is an easy statement. The number one English-speaking country on the planet is China. They have more English speakers than the United States does, who are fluent because their population is so big. They have 118 cities with more than 1 million people in them. And that doesn't talk about the tens of millions in many of those cities. The population there and the growth that they're experiencing based on they're going from basically the medieval age or the steam age up to a information age. They're having a huge boom, and that boom is likely to continue for a long time. They are not having a boom in innovation. They're not creating new things because they don't protect the rights of the people that create new things. So there's no incentive to do it. It's one of our strengths and one of their weaknesses. And every time people talk badly about the pharmaceutical companies and about how much they're charging for drugs, there are some really bad apples in that group. But about 95% of all new medication in the world is developed in the United States because they're allowed to charge for it. They're allowed to recoup their R&D losses. So keep that in mind. I don't like paying a lot for my medication either. Believe me, I don't like to see that money go out. But the fact that we have the medication has to do with the price that we're paying for it. Our quality of healthcare may not be as good, but the quality of drugs that we have is far better.
If I could change the subject,
let's do that.
And I've waited until we have, right about now, we start theoretically to have pretty much the maximum number of listeners. There's a very, very important thing I want you to listen to, and I want you to tell all your friends. This is one of the more important things you're going to encounter. If you have a PC, in other words, if you don't have an Apple computer, for all intents and purposes.
So Apple has some issues too.
You need to go in and to the update section in there, find the update section, and request and check that you've been updated. If you have an old XP or something system, in the past Microsoft was not supporting those and sending you updates anymore, and you may have been coasting along, and you may be in a position where you have to go request a Microsoft update. Microsoft has put out an update for the older operating systems. Why is that? Because there is a program floating around out there that has taken down hospitals and personal computers. And more, it's the largest hacking blow, the largest cyber warfare blow in the history of cyber warfare, according to the articles that I've read. It's basically taken from some NSA programs that were leaked.
All of the current operating systems had already updated for them, but if you don't update your computer or you have an older operating system...
Yeah, if you've got your Microsoft updates turned off because they're a pain and you don't trust Microsoft or something, turn them on manually if need be. Go in and request an update. And let me tell you what happens if you don't. You get a screen that pops up on your computer, and the standard cost the first time is $200 in bitcoins.
First, you got to figure out how to get bitcoins.
It gives you actually how to the screen that comes up. I'm looking at a copy of it right here. Tells you how you can go purchase bitcoins, and then you transfer the bitcoins to a Bitcoin account, which is anonymous, and then $200 theoretically makes you well again, except that now you're a target. And otherwise, everything on your computer is encrypted. Worse,
and you can't get to it.
You just can't. You can't get to it. And worse, if you don't pay within the couple of hours they give you to do it, and sometimes, if you don't pay within like 2 hours, they raise the ransom and they keep raising it. And then after about 6 hours, your computer's wiped. You can't. I mean, it's effectively wiped because you can't get to anything on your computer. All you got to do is update your operating system from Microsoft. They have the updates ready to download to your computer, but you have to authorize the download into your computer. Don't listen to anybody's email. Somebody sends you an email and say, click this link to...
Don't do that. That could be the problem there rather than the cure.
So, by the way... The fact that it's on your computer means at some point you opened an attachment somewhere,
or you clicked a link
someplace, and it's sneaked into your computer. Of course, your computer, if you've got it on there, there's a pretty fair chance that your computer has been the source of some of those problems. They've been using your computer to do that. But it's really quite important for everybody to do this for a couple of reasons. Number one, it'll save you losing whatever's on your computer. And it can bleed over into your cell phone and other places. The other thing is, if you haven't done this, and the FBI goes looking, and they are looking really hard for the source of this stuff, your computer may be in the source chain that's causing the problem. And I don't know that anybody has taken action on this yet, but theoretically, your failure to update your computer causing somebody else to lose a lot of money could be bad for your economic health.
I believe in the right to keep and bear arms, but if you take your brand new AR-15 loaded up, take the safety off, take it to a playground and lay it down in the middle of a bunch of kids and then walk away, I think you should be charged for that. And that's what's going on with these computers, is that all computers have the ability to reach out and touch other computers if you've got it in any way connected to the internet. And if you haven't protected your computer from being used as a weapon against someone else, it's just as irresponsible. It's a little hyperbolic. It's no kids are going to be shot by a weapon, but there are people whose heart operations aren't going through in Britain right now because the hospital computers are all down.
And this is, you want to know a little irony to this, at least to me it's irony. Microsoft released the fixes in its standard updates 2 weeks ago. And everybody who got hit in a Microsoft system and taken down denied the update to their Microsoft system, and they had to have manually turned off the updates.
Or if it were an older operating system, like the ones in the British hospitals, those are all on Vista. And the fact that the British operating systems are all on Vista is a good statement about public health care. Why would you upgrade your operating system? Why would you need to be more efficient? We're a government entity. So these hospitals are at fault. But only as much fault as we could lay at our own government's feet. The NSA could have reported this back. The fact that they didn't, I mean, we need to create weapons too. Don't get me wrong there. The NSA needs to have the ability to hit. If another country hits us, we need to be able to hit back. And in this case, the country that is most effective, are you affected by this outbreak of cyber warfare?
Well, originally it was Britain, wasn't it? Where was
Russia?
It? Russia?
Russia almost universally has been the subject of all the attacks. The rest of the attacks put together all over the rest of the world aren't as many as what's happened in Russia. And it isn't because it was targeted. It's because the Russians are using pirated copies of Microsoft, and they're not getting updates. So somebody writes an update that's supposed to match some of the Microsoft updates, but it doesn't include all the fixes. So the NSA made a weapon probably to target Russia at some point and didn't fix it for the rest of us. I mean, they actually could have had Microsoft put out a fix, and it wouldn't have affected the Russians because the Russians are using pirated versions. They wouldn't have been fixed. Instead, they didn't tell anyone about it, and that's there's some problems there.
The article I'm reading here in the Washington Post at least says the agency reported the flaw to the company, to Microsoft.
Yeah, when it was released to the public, it was dumped, and that's why Microsoft made the fix.
And it said Microsoft fixed the problem in a patch but released in March.
They released it in March, but the NSA knew about this 4 years ago. If they had gone directly to Microsoft, they would have lost a weapon, but they also would have protected hospitals. So they weren't able to use the weapon. The weapon got hacked and released. So they lost control of a weapon. That's a problem. That's, you know, right up there with the leaks in the intelligence community are as dangerous as far as weaponization of the cyber world as the leaks of normal weapons, because people can die over this.
Absolutely.
And if it's the right weapon, it can knock out the power grid. It can cause cars to go off the road or slam into each other eventually. So it's important that the NSA be working with the companies to protect as well as attack. And right now, all of our major operations in cyber warfare on the defense, intelligence, and NSA side are on offense and their own defense, but not on defending the country from an attack. They're about being able to counterattack. Anyway, that was a side note, but you're absolutely correct, and people need to go and get their computers updated.
All right. Telephone numbers in here remain. Telephone number, which is composed of numbers, 254-773-1400. Do you have any questions or thoughts about anything that we're saying or anything about economics or investments? We'd love to hear from you. We also need to do, we got a commercial break to do.
We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Again, if you'd like to contact us while for the show, 254-773-1400, and we'll be back on the other side.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we got about, 17 minutes left in the shoe, the really big shoe that we have today. And we've had a dearth of telephone calls. Oh, we have a telephone call. I can tell by the flashing.
Dearth.
A dearth.
We've had some.
Well, it's Darth Vader.
All right. Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys. I tuned in late, but the Wall Street Journal today had an article that the Treasury is considering 50 and 100-year bonds. Why would anybody tie their money up for 50 or 100 years when we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow? I'll hang up on this thing.
When we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be Sunday.
Yeah, it depends on if you're in Japan, because in Japan, it's going to be Monday. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
You're absolutely correct. Why would somebody that is, by the way, the big question that the dealers, Treasury dealers are asking. They don't think there's going to be enough demand. Now, the British have actually issued some really long-term bonds.
Apple computer has issued 100-year bonds.
So would there be somebody who wanted to tie up their money for 100 years? Yes, I would imagine, because they have if Apple could sell them, I mean, the chances of the United States government paying off a debt 100 years from now, I think, is higher than that of Apple. And Apple was able to sell 100-year bonds. So. Right.
And the reality is that the interest rates are extremely low. It's really, really a good idea for the U.S. government to get some 100-year bonds at today's interest rate.
Now, if you were in China, where 100 years is just, you know, a moment, and you had the opportunity to buy a guaranteed return where the interest rate would probably equal inflation, are pretty close to inflation, because the longer the term of the bond, the higher the interest rate.
Not in this case. They're talking about having a lower interest rate on the 100-year bonds than on the 30.
Well, maybe, but I read that they would probably only have a slight interest rate premium over the 30. But still, let's just say, for example, it's 3.5%. If somebody said, I live in an unstable country, and it's entirely possible 100 years from now this country won't exist, and I have the ability to take my money for a very long term, for many generations, and tie it up, as you say, in a place that probably will exist, where they promise to compensate me for inflation, and I don't have to pay taxes on it, I can see an argument for that, because in the case of a big collapse someplace or a big crisis, the price of that bond would go up, and you could trade it.
When you said don't have to pay taxes, if somebody's living in another country and they're not reporting it as income because it's in the same account somewhere, then they don't pay taxes on that income.
Yeah, if you're like the Chinese government or a Chinese billionaire or something, you may not even need to pay taxes on that. You can put it in, you know, an offshore account or something. And so if you're looking at multi-generational strategies, what you're looking for is security. You're not looking for gain. You're looking for security. The United States, I hate to say this.
You don't hate to say it. You love it.
No. I hate to say it because it's going to irritate some people. But the United States currency is considered the most stable investment on the planet, much more stable than gold. And you can see that, and I don't mean by surveys, you can see it economically in the way the currency behaves in a crisis. Our currency went up and gold went down in the 2009 crisis, which tells you a world about what, in a time of crisis, people think of gold in our currency.
Right, and this is pretty clear. We have the strongest economic system on the planet by far. And we have a lot of protections for individual property rights. So somewhere else, somebody putting money here, and even people living here that just want to put money away, it may be a nice place to put the money. Now, I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't say it's a great idea, but you know, there are people that would do it. I don't think there's going to be a huge demand for it. It's an area, I mean, this is why I wouldn't recommend it. 100 years ago, in 1917, the currency that was the most stable, that when a crisis happened, it went up and everything else went down, was the British pound. It was the United Kingdom. It was the height of the empire. The sun did not set on that empire. It was always daylight somewhere in the empire of the United Kingdom. And from then, 100 years later, the pound is still quite a nice system. The debts of the British government are still quite nice. Now, has it ever been a fact that 100 years after the world power is not only not the world power, but it's kind of missing from the scene? Yes. As a matter of fact, yes. Spain, if you go back to the 1700s and come forward. France, if you go back to about the same time period and come forward.
Well, it actually is a bet, and the reason the British were able to do it is bet on what's called the Anglo-American socioeconomic system, which since the Roman Empire has been the most successful system in the world. It's an entire system of private property ownership and political institutions, and we could go. I could write a book on this. But why would I put a money?
You did.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I did actually. So the issue is that, people, how much demand there would be for 100-year treasury bonds, I don't know, but there would be some, and it would be really smart. It would be a really smart move on the
Secretary of the Treasury is like, let's stick it away there. I mean, if you can keep an interest rate locked in at the levels that they are today for 100 years, if we even get a little bit of inflation between now and the next decade, the interest rates are going to be higher on a 10-year than on the 100-year. So from the perspective of the politicians and the administration, it'd be a no-brainer to do it. From the perspective of somebody wanting to put away money that long, unless you live in a place where you think the government is going to take all your money, it's probably not a good idea. And that almost means it's not this government, because if you thought the government was going to take all your money, you would prove it by giving it to them for the loan, but they would give it back.
I frankly don't think it's so much the government will take all your money as the government might not be there.
Right, or the banks may not be there. And or, you know,
if I were in China and I had the ability to buy 100-year U.S. treasuries, I'd probably buy them.
The Chinese goals right now in the high net worth can be summed up in two phrases. How do I get my family out? How do I get my money out?
And also, how do I preserve my money in the process?
Right.
And matter of fact, not only would I buy 100-year treasuries, I would keep them in book form at the Treasury.
Yeah.
That way, the money is in the United States, not in China.
And getting the money to the United States is part of the reason why the Bitcoins are up so much, because Chinese are buying Bitcoins. The Chinese government is working as fast as it possibly can to shut down every Bitcoin repository in China. But if a billionaire finds one open, uses it, buys a bunch of Bitcoins, transfers them overseas, gets them converted to U.S. dollars, then that's the reason why the Bitcoin prices have gone up lately. It isn't because the Bitcoin is this fabulous new currency. It's because it's a way to get money out of China without having to worry even if they lose money in the deal, even if between purchasing and selling the Bitcoin, they lose 30 or 40%, they're afraid of losing it all. And the reality is that there are billionaires that have disappeared in the last year in China.
Yes, it's called the vanishing billionaires.
Seriously, there are quite a few of them. They were hanging out doing their normal billionaire thing, and now they're gone.
It's kind of like only they don't call them billionaires in Russia. They call them oligarchs.
Yeah, oligarchs.
Oligarchs.
Oligarchs sounds better, though.
Oligarch. Yeah, they call them oligarchs. And the oligarchs in Russia, now, they don't just simply disappear.
No,
they just,
there's some kind of public version of why they disappeared.
Yeah, they disappear into prison for doing something like existing.
Yes. You hiccuped in your television interview. Yes.
Yep.
You were obviously on some type of drug. You're going to prison.
Right. And
what's happened in China is they don't make a big deal out of it. The billionaire
just
disappears, and all of their family disappears, and all of their assets become part of a state-owned enterprise.
Yes.
SOEs over there suck up all those assets. If they were disappearing by leaving China, then all those assets would have been slowly disappearing, not disappearing overnight, and the Chinese going, well, I don't know what happened there.
Well, actually, in many cases, the billionaires were trying to disappear by leaving China.
Right.
And in the process, they disappeared into the bowels of China somewhere.
Yes, they did disappear. They just didn't disappear with their wealth. Their wealth went one way and they went the other.
Which is, by the way, one of the reasons that I'm not concerned about China overtaking the United States in any serious aspect. Yet people have been saying the Chinese economy is bigger. You know, you can work up by twisting the figures around.
If you say there's something called pension or price purchase parity, PPP, that economists really love, but if you used PPP as a GDP, what you'll find is that the people of Mississippi make as much money as the people of New York.
Mm-hmm. So
no, they do not.
We the only enemies that we're likely to have that are effective are ourselves. And we do a pretty good job of trying to wreck our institutions every once in a while.
Right.
And thinking that if we blow them all up, something better will emerge.
It takes a lot of work to do the something better, and it's better mm-hmm. to do it without the time crunch of everything's blown up and we have to get this done.
And it's a thing that's very unpopular to say, but we happen to live in a country with arguably one of, if not the best, overall government. Certainly the strongest economy, which I think follows on from that first statement, and the greatest property rights.
And I would say you're arguably, I mean, we have the most stable government. It's the longest lasting constitutional government on the planet.
I would venture to say it's the oldest government on the planet.
It is. Yeah. We've got a constitution that's
extremely
long.
We sometimes get a mistaken view that because it's not perfect and we want to focus on the things that are imperfect in it, it'd be better just to blow the whole thing up or blow big pieces of it up, because whatever came out on the other side would obviously be better.
I have a 2-year-old.
It's not true.
I have a 2-year-old, and that is her method of solving any issue at this point. I mean, she's really good at making these really intricate and tall block towers. They're made out of wooden blocks, and they go up high enough that she has to climb up on chairs to continue stacking the layers of the towers. If she drops one piece that may not even be connected to the tower, on certain moments, she has a tendency to fling her arms around and knock down the entire structure. And she's had to be extremely careful to avoid doing that. And her instinct and my instinct and your instinct is the same when frustrated. Let's just break everything. And we have to restrain ourselves because we spend a lot of time building the thing that we want to break over a minor mm-hmm. frustration. So let's kind of, we try to build in protections, like our houses are hard for 2-year-olds to destroy. It's still possible. Our houses are hard for adults to destroy. It's still possible. Anyway, that was my... let's not break everything. Let's fix everything. That's probably a better way to fix it, is to fix it while it's not too broken, instead of breaking it a lot and then trying to fix it.
That's all very true.
Out of time.
Yeah.
Just got a few minutes left.
One of the things, if I could change about what we're doing, is our education system to focus it a little differently. One of the challenges that we face going forward is, it used to be that a person could go to high school and maybe even drop out of high school and get a job in get a job in retail, in face-to-face sales. That was kind of the entry into something else, and then they would train at something else beyond that, and they would gradually work their way into the system. There's a study by The Economist that said people displaced from face-to-face sales positions in retail, and that would include waiters, waitresses, people who work in retail shops and so on, are having difficulty moving into e-retail or digital retail because it takes more skills.
Or different skills.
And it takes different skills. You still have to have the interpersonal skill, but the point is that you have to be able to function around a computer and understand
right.
how a computer works
right.
and type. And the other thing that they're missing in many cases, and this sounds very strange to me, is the math skills. And I thought, if a person's making change, they obviously have math skills. Well, no, actually what they're used to doing is they put the price comes up, they put in the amount of money the person gives them, and the cash register or the computer tells them how much change to give.
And when you're starting a new business or you're working for another business that doesn't have that tool already made, it's very difficult mm-hmm. to proceed.
And in an online situation, even customer support, you've got to have some understanding of those issues. Apparently, a lot of people don't. And the fact that we have a significant number of people who finish high school who don't have those skills is bad news.
And we are just about out of time for this week's program. If you enjoyed this program, first, you probably need to get back on your medication. But even if you are on medication and you still enjoyed it, then we actually do this for a living. We give advice to people. And if you would like to call our office, We talk to people with high net worth and make exceptions occasionally for people that we believe are energetically trying to fix themselves. So you can call our office locally at
947, of course, the local area code is 254. It's 947-1111.
You can reach that number toll-free. It's voicemail during the weekends and real-life people during the week at 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. We've got podcasts. They go up generally every Monday following our Saturday program. And philosophies and newsletters, you can email us at jeff at tpwc.com or jake at tpwc.com.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.